Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Good morning again and welcome. My guest today, Diane Mills, is a multi-published and multi-award-winning best-selling author. Readers always find an adventure within the pages of her books. She weaves memorable characters with unpredictable plots to create action-packed, suspense-filled novels. Diane believes every breath of life is someone's story, so why not capture those moments and create a thrilling adventure? Diane demonstrates her faith in her writing, loves to guide other writers on their writing journey, and has a passion for the people of Sudan. Good morning, Diane, and welcome to Step Into the Light.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of your blog talk.
Diane, I'm so excited to have you. Do you know, twice I missed seeing you in person. The first time, you did a book signing down here in my neck of the woods in southeastern Colorado at the Lighthouse in La Junta.
Yes, I did.
It's been a couple of years back, and something came up that day, some conflict, and I couldn't get there, and I was so disappointed. And then recently, we read your Concrete Evidence book in our ACFW book club, and you were going to be on a Zoom call, and I was so excited about that. And then I ended up attending a friend's funeral, and I got to watch the replay, but it wasn't the same as actually being able to talk with you. So I'm so excited today to actually be able to talk with you one-on-one, even though we're not face-to-face. So welcome again.
Yes. We will do that.
Definitely. So Diane, if you would tell us what childhood experiences influenced your desire to be a writer. Were you one of those kids in school that couldn't wait for an essay, or did the writing bug bite you later on in life?
Oh, I was reading the moment I was able to put STOP, Daddy, what does that spell? I just read everything in sight. And so, you know, being able to get into the school library and oh my goodness, I've got to read all of these books. It was just a beautiful way for God to plant the seeds of enjoying and understanding the value of reading fiction and nonfiction, but my heart always went to fiction, and started out with, you know, the Bobbsey Twins and worked my way up to Nancy Drew and all of those books. And I just knew that I was destined to be a writer. In fact, Patty, I wrote my first book in the second grade on a Big Chief yellow notebook pad. I'm giving away my age, and the number two pencil. And I just continued after that.
I loved Nancy Drew and Bobbsey Twins. Another one of my favorite series was the Sherry Ames series, because she was a nurse, and that's what I was destined to be later on in life, which I kind of didn't know at the time, but I read that series as well. And I always wanted to be a writer, but my life kind of got detoured quite a bit. So here I am finally,
you know,
in my early 70s, still trying to catch that dream.
But you know what? You are doing it. And that is what's important. One of my dear friends, and I don't mean to get you off track of the questions that you have for me, but on her 74th birthday, she received a four-book contract from a traditional publisher. So don't you dare give up on yourself. You just keep going.
Well, thank you for that encouragement, Diane. And I have an over 50 writer blog, and where I usually have guest bloggers, and they tell the story of how in their late 70s, even into their early 80s, they got published. Well, Diane, how do you manifest your faith message through your adventure and suspense novels? And let me say to readers, believe me, when you do pick up one of Diane's novels, you do pick up an adventure. How do you manifest your faith message?
Very simply, through the characters. It is a part of who, maybe just one character. And that's what makes a Christian novel. And that is one character. It only takes one. Solves life's problems, lives their life from a Christian worldview. So it doesn't mean that I am going to beat someone over the head with a Bible. I am going to show you, not tell you, I'm going to show you how at least one character lives their life, and in my books it's often dangerously, and solves problems from a Christian worldview. And I always think, and you can laugh because I think it's funny too, who do you want behind a Glock? Do you want a bad guy or do you want a Christian?
So, good point.
It makes sense to me. The whole aspect of me writing a faith-based Christian novel is, first of all, to entertain the reader. That's foremost. That's critical. That's the first priority. When I talk about my own goals when I'm putting a story on paper. And the second aspect is to inspire that reader. I want that reader to think, oh my goodness, the hero or the heroine in that story went forth and they changed their lives. They grew so much. So maybe I can go back to school. Maybe I can write that book. Maybe I can be a better mother, a better husband, a better wife, and whatever that falls. And the other one is just an encouragement. I want that reader to close the book and have read a satisfactory ending, not necessarily happily ever after when you write suspense and adventure, but to just be encouraged as to who they are. And with those three, you just can't help but put Jesus in there.
No, you can't, and you're right, Diane. I think readers always like to ask authors this question, where do your plot ideas come from? And I know that a lot of your books are based on FBI, and I'm curious to know, do you have experience with the FBI? Do you have a friend, a relative, somebody that has really given you the inside track on this, or do you do strictly through research?
Oh, all of the above. I am a member of the Houston's FBI Citizens Academy, which is a group of people who are not agents, but they go through several weeks of getting to know all the divisions of the FBI, and then we stay together as a group and do things periodically for the community. So I have people here in Houston and in D.C. whom I call and say, hey, I've got this type of situation. Can you help me with it? I've also done that with the ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. I took their course, which was very, very fun, and am a part of that same organization. I just believe you need to get out and do it. If I'm going to write about a book years ago when I wrote the book about Sudan, I've got to go to Sudan. If I'm going to talk about a Secret Service agent, then I've got to interview one, or a Texas Marshal, or all the other types of different professions and careers that are out there that I don't have their shoes on. I need to know what is good and what kind of personalities they have. What do they enjoy and not enjoy about what they do? So that I can take a character and write realistically what that character is feeling and what they're going through. As far as the plot ideas, oh, everywhere. Other books that, oh, I wouldn't have wrote that book this way. Or movies that I might have done a different twist. Or, oh, you'll love this, or your listeners may love this. But when we go to a restaurant, I want to be in a booth. Because when I'm in a booth, I can hear other conversations and nobody can accuse me of eavesdropping except my husband.
That's right.
Those kinds of things. Oh my goodness. Nightmares and dreams. A lot of my stories have come from nightmares and dreams. And
wow.
Sometimes they're just funny things, like going through the neighborhood and somebody has a roll of carpet out by the curb for the trash to pick up. And my husband will say, oh, somebody got new flooring. And I'm not thinking that. I'm thinking there's a dead body wrapped up in it.
Exactly, yes. I knew you were going to say that.
That's just the way. But That's exactly it. Just driving along. Oh my goodness! Last March, husband and I took a road trip into all of the parks, the state parks in Utah, and oh, so many what ifs. Oh, this could happen. That could happen. Oh, there's no internet connectivity here. Oh, you could live here and nobody would ever find you, kind of stuff. So I just get excited about life and life experience.
So that pretty much morphs into the question that I had next is, how much of your own life experiences do you weave into your stories? And I think you answered that pretty well. But there is a question that begs to be asked in the back of my mind, Diane, references something you said earlier. Have you ever been behind the clock?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not very good. Something funny. When I was taking, yes, we did work in the FBI on a firing range using all types of firearms, and that was very interesting for me, who, you know, is scared to death of guns. But when I took the ATF class, we went to an indoor range, but it was using, again, a whole variety of weapons. Now, there were, I believe, 16 in that class, and there were only two women. And the men were big, burly guys, you know, that don't have any problem holding a weapon. And, you know, I'm 5'2 and 110 pounds. So, you know, some of those were very, very heavy. But I remember the instructor handing me the same type of firearm that Bonnie and Clyde had used. Oh, and I hadn't had much luck up until then with the other weapons, but there was something about that particular weapon, and don't even ask me what it was right now because I don't remember. I just remember that I had such good accuracy with that Bonnie and Clyde weapon, and the guys who were standing behind me, and they were all laughing and cheering me on, which was, it was pretty fun, pretty fun. And I know I shouldn't told the story without telling you the type of weapon, but anybody can look that up. So,
wow.
Yes. Life experiences.
Never know.
It was fun.
I'm sure.
Takes me out of my research, takes me out of my normal mode of wanting to be just kind of, well, I can say it, you know, just kind of prissy, don't like my hands getting too awfully dirty, you know, yeah. All those kinds of things, into just sort of morph into this person that in my mind, I'm this character. I can do this because I have these traits. And it just makes the whole writing process and research and everything else that I'm doing just that much more fun.
Oh, I can imagine. It almost reminds me of the, I didn't see the whole movie, but I've seen several clips of it, the Walter Mitty movie about the guy that, he just imagines that he's all these wonderful characters.
Yes. Yes, I love that. Wonderful.
Well, Diane, your name has appeared on bestseller lists, and you have won several awards. At what point in your career did you feel that you had obtained success as an author?
When it happens, I'll let you know. No, I don't look at that. I don't look at that as being successful. I look at the fact that I'm a writer. You're a writer. Lots of people are writers. If God so chooses to gift me with publication, that's wonderful. And that's all on him. And I don't mean that in a degrading way at all. I'm just saying that I've never thought of myself as successful. I don't know if I ever would. That's just me. I'm
that's
just doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
I've heard other people say that too, Diane, and I think we've discussed this on other shows. I think I feel that way here too. If X amount of people listen to this show, one person that listened to it may be the person that goes out and influences 100,000 people with whatever message.
Yes. Yes.
And that's something that I don't know and probably never will know this side of heaven as to who actually received a positive life change or some message that they heard that just took them out of despair or depression or whatever. that's something that we will probably never know. Unless somebody specifically writes to you and says, I was here and your book put me here.
I don't know if you've had that happen or not.
You know what I think, and I've said this for a number of years, so if you've heard me say this before, you can say, oh, Diane, you're just getting old. But anyway, let me tell you this. I write Christian fiction for a lot of reasons, but mainly because I know that that was a calling for me. But this is something I would like your listeners to think about. We can, and we have, family, friends, neighbors who will never come to our house because they're afraid that we might say Jesus or pray. They're not about to go to church. I am Southern Baptist, so we like to eat and have a good time. They're not going to do any of those things. But we can hand them a book, a novel, in which, like I said before, one or more characters solve their problems and face life in a Christian worldview, and they begin to get it. So I look as writers as farmers, because we're planting seeds for the kingdom of God. And that's how I look at it. It's okay if I don't know. It would be lovely to know, but it's okay if we don't. God knows, and that's what counts.
That's exactly right. And I can't recall who I was talking to just the other day. It was probably on a show about that very thing. How we plant the seeds, but we don't even know. It's not even necessary our responsibility to go out and chase people. That's not within our purview. That's all in God's hands. That's something that is completely out of our control.
So
I 100% absolutely.
We'll take a break here where I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light with host Patty Sheen here on Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is multi-published, multi-award-winning, best-selling author Diane Mills. If you would like to listen to this episode again or hopefully refer it to friends and family, it is on archive. The most current 5 episodes can be found on the homepage at my website, Patty Sheen, that's spelled PattiSheene.com. The Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page will give you access to all the episodes we have aired to date. Under each episode is a more information tab that provides links to guest website, social media, and other resource information. Let's return to our interview. You have a heart for the people of Sudan, Diane. I discovered this when I looked at your website, and pretty sure I read, I think it was Lost Boy No More.
Yes.
The title
that was
on your
first one.
Way back when, mm-hmm. Yeah. And as soon as I saw that title, it kind of sparked a memory in me, and I hate to say it, but I'm getting too old to remember much of what I read that long ago. But anyway, that title just caught my attention right away. I'm sure I read that book. So what sparked your interest in the region, and what can you tell us about it? What would you like listeners
it
to know?
It started, several years ago, an organization who was influential in helping lost boys get settled when they were being brought into the United States. They were being brought in everywhere, but they were helping them get settled and putting them in homes and helping them get educated and things of that nature. And they called me and they said, Diane, we really need someone to write a nonfiction book about the lost boys of Sudan. And I turned them down and said, no, I don't know anything about Sudan. I write fiction, blah, blah, blah. And they convinced me to come to a conference where some of the lost boys were speaking, and they would give more information about what had happened with the genocide in southern Sudan and all the horrible atrocities that these people went through. So I went, and I cried during the whole thing, and at the end, I said, okay, I don't know how I'm going to write this book, but I will. But one of the speakers was a young man at the time, Abraham Neal. He had been one of the lost boys of Sudan, and for those of your listeners who don't know what happened in that genocide, see, I wrote the book in 2006 and 2007, so it was prior to that, but what had happened is that northern Sudan had declared war on southern Sudan. It was a mixture of faith because the south in their villages were mostly Christian and the north were Muslim. in the South, you have lots of oil, you had the religion problem, and you had beautiful agricultural land, animals and things of that nature. So the jihad was declared on the Southern Sudan. The fathers in the village always instructed their sons, and their sons could be anywhere from 4, 5, 6 on up to age 11. Their work was to tend the cattle outside of the village. These lost boys were told by all of them, if you hear gunshots, you run. You do not come back to the village. Well, that's what happened to these hundreds and thousands of boys who were bound together. First, they were in Ethiopia. Then they were run off by rebellious Ethiopian armies there, and then ended up in a camp in Kenya, where they finally were able to have peace, education, Christianity, and eventually many of them were interviewed and found their way into the United States and across Europe. On my journey to find out about the lost boys, my first connection was the young man who had made me cry. During the course of writing this book, not only was I able to interview many, many of these young men, and many of the young men could not tell me their story because it was too painful, but I was also able to interview those who worked with them, those who helped educate them, pastors, all kinds of people who worked with these, at the time, were boys, you know, the young men as they grew up. At one point, and it shows you how God works, I had finished the book, and my editor, and at the time it was Brodmann and Holman when they were publishing, said, Diane, I need another name on this book. I need a name of who you felt is the most influential young man in this journey you've taken. Well, Abraham had been on 60 Minutes twice, and I knew him, and I met him, and he was in Georgia attending college, and I said, I don't know how we're going to do this except by phone call. He said, well, when do you have to have it done? I said, I have 1 month to go back through with this with you. And it just so happened that he was going to be in Houston for that month. I remember it was the month of May, taking a fast-track course at a Christian college here. So he stayed with us. And by the time he left, he called me mom. I called him son. And I have some grandchildren I haven't seen, but I have their pictures. But I have stayed in touch to this day. Wonderful, wonderful man who became a bishop for the Episcopalian Church and serves in Sudan. However, his family lives in Kenya because it's just too dangerous. There are many, many stories that came out of those interviews. Everything from the what was going on with the oil that the Northern Sudan wanted, the agriculture, the animals, just so, so many stories, some very, very sad and some were beautiful. At one point, after I wrote the nonfiction, I knew that I had to write fiction too. So my publisher at the time, and it was Cook at the time, they were doing some fiction. They said, Diane, do you want to go to Southern Sudan? I said, yes. So I went. Yes, I went. And I stayed in Juba. I had my choice of staying in a tent along the Nile River or in a compound in a room that was about the size of a closet. I took the compound with a room the size of a closet. And I've met many, many wonderful, wonderful people, had a few scary experiences that were good for me. I can say that now. At the time, I wasn't afraid or scared. I wasn't frightened until I got back home and got to thinking about it. And through that, I was able to bring much more life to my two novels. And again, I met some wonderful, wonderful people. It was an experience that not everyone can go through. Not something that I expected, but my heart has always been for the people of Sudan. My prayers have been for the people of Sudan. When a person from Sudan, and I'm sure this is true from any third world country or any country that's faced with persecution because of their faith, when they tell you that Jesus is enough, they know Jesus is enough. When I had people who had missing limbs, had seen their family slaughtered, a lot of really, really grotesque stories. They say Jesus is enough. It is enough. Now, the two novels, Tyndale picked up, and those are available on ebook. The titles are Where Tomorrow Leads and Long Walk Home.
Okay.
They can actually go to my website and click on the different buy buttons for whatever they want, and they can pick those up. But those two novels show the different personalities in Southern Sudan, how, and many of those came from experiences and true stories. So that, you know, my heart is there.
Diane, I have such a deep admiration for people like you who are willing to go to a third world country and give up for whatever period of time. I don't care if it's a single day. All of the creature comforts that we are used to here in this country, because it is, it's got to be a real sacrifice for a person. And it sounds like you have developed such a strong passion for these people and for their stories. And obviously that is a God-ordained thing. Just in telling your story, when you shared the different ways that you encountered these people, and it just amazes me. And you are to be congratulated for following through with that desire that God put into your heart.
Oh, well, thank you for such kind words. And I appreciate it. There were lots of, you know, as I said, sad stories, wonderful, inspirational stories. And then there would be a few humorous things that would happen. And that's good. That is good. It's good for all of us to get out of our comfort zone.
Yes. Yes, that's so true. Well, yeah, when I read on your website about your interest in Sudan, and I thought, oh, this sounds like something that you would just love to share. So I'm glad that we touched on this topic in addition to the writing. Getting back to the writing, you also have a passion for helping other writers achieve, well, like we said, maybe not success, but further their journey, their writing journey, let's put it that way. You were actually one of the original founders of ACFW, I believe.
So,
yes,
can you share
some of the advice that you offer to new writers, or to writers in general? I guess it doesn't even have to be new writers, just in general. What are some of your tips of the trade, if you will?
Well, I can real quickly say, read, 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 write every day. Every day, read something that has to do with the publishing industry, writing, improving the craft, marketing and promotion, and social media. You've got to do that, and you've got to do that every day. You cannot slide. And always be prepared to give back to a serious writer who wants to learn. There can be no secrets. There can be no secrets when we're all working in a ministry. And I look at writing as a ministry. So if I've learned something or I've tried something and it works well, why would I not want to share it with you or anyone else? So I'm very adamant and intense when it comes to mentoring other writers, teaching other writers. I wrote a series of books in the last 2 years on writing fiction. Edie Melson and I wrote a book on social media for Today's Writer, just ways that writers can improve themselves. I thoroughly enjoy seeing that light bulb moment, or a writer that I have helped in some way and they win an award, or they suddenly have reached their publication dreams. I love that. It is so rewarding. You know, it makes me feel like a proud mama, like we do with our kids and our grandkids.
Yeah. And that's one thing I must say about writers that I have learned over the years that I've been in ACFW. I've been in ACFW for several years myself. I very seldom encounter people, how can I say it, that are resentful of another person's whatever. I mean, I think we really, really do, especially Christian writers, we really do champion each other through all of those little successes. It's exciting to see other people succeed, I think. And because, like you said, it is a ministry. And we are all working toward that same goal of trying to sow those seeds and win hearts for the Lord, you know? So, yeah, especially in Christian writing. Now, I've talked to a couple of people who have been to secular conferences and say that it is a very different atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is so sad. I've directed until a year and a half ago with Edie Melson, the Blue Ridge Mountain Christian Writers
yes.
Conference. Oh, sweet, sweet time. Love that conference. Has my heart in anyway, I just love it. And what you find is that the conference itself, when it is able to offer courses on different levels of writers and different genres, that you're just opening up the doorway for God's word to be manifested in so many different ways. So that is another conference that I've got to be there every year, you know, kind of thing. So that, and then ACFW being the first one. There are just many, many other wonderful conferences. Wheaton Write to Publish, the Colorado Christian Writers Conference, lots of smaller ones. And some writers beginning, they want the smaller ones because they can feel really scared at a big conference.
It's a bigger one.
So
yeah.
Lots of opportunities out there. And we just have to get out of our comfort zone and jump on it and do it.
Yes, I've heard a lot about Blue Ridge, and living out here in Colorado like I do, Blue Ridge is kind of far away from me, unless they did it on Zoom, you know, and I think you're doing it in person this year.
Give us a sneak peek, if you will, of your next project. What have you got in the wings for your next release?
Okay, that next release, end of August, 1st of September, with Tyndale, a romantic suspense called Facing the Enemy. And I'm going to be very, very serious here, and I hope your listeners will stay with me for this. In July 2021, we lost one of our four adult sons in a pedestrian accident, a hit-and-run kind of thing. And with that, although I had never been a big journaler before, you know, take notes for church and that kind of thing, but I'd never journaled a lot, but I did during that time. The anger, the grief, the bitterness, all of those things. And then I needed to get started on this story. I had known before our son was killed that I wanted to write a story about a young woman who saw her brother be killed in an accident. Already had all the emotions. And so Facing the Enemy that comes out next is a healing book for me, because I put into the heart and mind and soul of the heroine what I felt going through the loss of my son. So that book is very dear to me. I don't have a favorite book that I've written, because that's like saying, well, this is my favorite child or this is my
yeah.
favorite grandchild. And so that never happens. But in this particular book, this young woman is an FBI agent, and she retires. The pain is just too hard, too difficult for her to deal with, and she needs some time off. But, you know, once an agent, always an agent. Once hurting about a hit and run and ever finding who did it is something that cannot leave her alone. And when she finds out that her brother had tossed her out of the way of an oncoming car, and that car was really aimed for her, then that puts the story into motion. So Facing the Enemy, I'm very excited about that story, because it's a heart story.
Oh, for sure, and Diana. It's going to take a lot of emotion on your part to write that story. Wow.
But it was good in that I healed so much from
yes.
writing it.
Wow.
And the rest of the book is just fictitious. It's just, you know, what happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That sounds like a powerful story that you have there in the works, Diane, and thank you for sharing that with us. And again, let me express my condolences to you over the loss of your son. That has got to be just a gut-wrenching experience. I cannot even imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't imagine it. And the flip side, parents shouldn't have to bury their children.
Right.
And that kind of thing. But thank you for listening. But that is what the next book is about, or how it begins.
Can you tell us off the top of your head how many books you have out there, I'm sure you know, that are a part of the FBI series?
Oh, goodness. Now, total books, I don't know about the FBI series, but total books since I was first published, Facing the Enemy is number 90.
90?
And
oh, my word.
90, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I don't know how that happens. Don't even ask me. I can't even remember all the character names. But, yes, that is number 90. And, you know, for your listeners who are writers, I'd like to, if you don't mind, give them the same challenge that my husband gave me in 1996. And
okay.
This is it, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. Go ahead. I don't mind at all.
Okay. I probably challenged you with it. But he said to me, stop telling me that someday you're going to write a book. Quit your job. I'll give you 1 year to get anything published. You don't even have to get paid for it. But if you can get something published, you don't ever have to go back to your other job. There's no need to. So, you know, dynamite comes in small packages. So I said, all right, I will. And I looked at it as a full-time job. I looked at dividing up my day into writing, learning about writing, reading in my favorite genre, reading the bestsellers and trying to figure out why, joining writing groups and giving back and participating. And so I never went back to – I wrote that book and sold it and have never gone back. And today my husband helps me with that ministry. He is extremely talented in putting together videos and making me look good,
and
the lighting and all of those kinds of things. And we honestly put in 6 and sometimes 7 days a week. I guess I shouldn't say that, but it's true, in keeping everything going and getting it out there and trying to reach as many people as possible with not only a story that we're passionate about and feel great about, but hopefully they will enjoy and they'll pick up that seed of faith.
What a blessed partnership you have there, huh? Oh, that is wonderful. I have to ask you one last question. When you talk about writing 90 books, and I've often thought this about multi-published authors, how do you avoid rewriting the same phrases and the same scenes with your characters? Like, say you have your characters in a romantic scene, or I don't know, in a restaurant or something. How do you come up with something fresh and different with each book?
That, you know, that does take a lot of work, in that I look at the personality, and everybody does have a unique personality. I look at their backstory, and I mean life experiences that brought them to chapter 1, line 1. Mm-hmm. And I look at their careers. I look at where they live, what they do, everything that would make up this unique character, how they would look at love, how they would welcome love, how they would shun love, you know, how frightened they would be, those kinds of things. So in hopes that it is new and fresh and original each time. I know I picked out a few names before, and my husband would say, no, you can't. You've already used that name. And if I could give somebody a word of advice, okay, when you start with that book, start with a spreadsheet. These are the names of the hero and the heroine and the antagonist, so you don't use those again.
And I suppose, Diane, thinking back to that question, suppose you're in a restaurant and there's 20 couples in there, okay? And when you think about it, each one, they bring their own experiences to the table, so to speak, to the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of those 20 couples is going to react differently to whatever. to that environment than the other 19. So I guess in a way I'm answering my own question, but I've often wondered that. I mean, people that really write a lot of books, and I think, gee, did they ever worry that, like you said, that they named the characters the same name, or that they have almost the exact same scene that they had in book 27 compared to book 76? Or
If writing was easy, everybody'd be doing it.
That's the truth.
And
it is
a solitary, you know, it's just you, the computer, and God. And sometimes I think he's laughing at me, but that's okay. But it is a situation that, for those who are not comfortable in working alone and being alone, it's not easy for them.
Diane, I want to thank you so much. You have shared so much about your life and about
writing and about
your passion for Sudan. And I really appreciate you taking the time to spend with me and my listeners today. And may God continue to bless you in your writing. And I'm sure that you're going to reach the 100 mark with your books before too long.
I don't know about that. But thank you so much. It was an honor to receive your invitation. And I know that in the show notes you'll put my website, and people can reach me via my website, and I always answer my email.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, yes, you answered mine right away. I know when I reached out to you, so I can attest to that.
Well, thank you, and I wish you the best with your writing, and I hope that the listeners who are thinking about writing are thinking about doing something that they've always wanted to do. It just didn't feel like they had, like me, I didn't have the confidence. And so you've got to do it. You've got to try.
Most definitely. Well, thank you for those words of encouragement, Diane, and again, thank you, and may God bless you. Listeners, in closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered. Thank you so much for listening today. If you would like to listen to this show again, it is on archive. Go to my website, which is pattysheene.com. That's spelled pattisheene.com. The most current 5 episodes are found right on the home page. You'll find the Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page. Click on that. It will give you a link to all the shows we have aired to date. Under each show is a more information tab. Click on that, and you will find more information about our guests, such as website and social media contacts. I can also be found on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Pinterest as Patty Sheene. Until next time, God bless you.